Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and we got some rock and roll back here today as Corey Taylor makes his third appearance on Talk is Jericho. He's about to release his fourth book, America 51, on August 8th. Coincidentally, I'm almost about to release my fourth book as well. Mine is called No is a Four-Letter Word, coming out August 29th. You got to pre-order it now at Amazon.com. That's Amazon.com, and go type in No is a Four-Letter Word and go type in America 51. Corey's going to tell us why he decided to tackle politics for his fourth book. He's always such a controversial writer. And of course, we're going to talk about the brand new Stone Sour record, Hydro Grad, the crazy new video they just shot for Fabulous with the wild and wacky tube men in the audience. If you haven't seen it, you got to check out YouTube. It's really funny. We've also got a great conversation talking about the new record, talking about pro wrestling, talking about everything under the sun. Corey is a very, very vocal guy. He's a lot of fun to chat with, and he is here today to chat with us. Plus, we got some other news, including some DDP news to share with you. Diamond Dallas Page is still so fired up about his WWE Hall of Fame induction that he's extended the celebration with a DDP UK tour. That's right. Dallas is coming back to the UK. He's bringing his inspirational conversation and Q&A sessions to Glasgow, Manchester, Birmingham, and London September 2nd and 3rd. He'll also be signing autographs, taking selfies, hosting his famous DDP yoga workshops. It's inspiration meets perspiration, and you can get your tickets at DDPUKTour.com. That's DDPUKTour.com. And if DDP is not going to be near you anytime soon, do what I did and get the DDP Yoga Now app, so you can do DDP Yoga whenever and wherever you want. The DDP's got nutrition tips, recipes, cooking tips to get you on a healthier eating plan, and tools to track your progress. DDP has thought of everything with this app right now. DDP's giving you 20% off his killer program. Just go to DDPYoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of this great deal. And while you're there, take advantage of the fire sale he's having. All clothing 50% off, and DDP Yoga really is more than just a workout program. It's a healthier way to live. Like I said, the app lets you do the workouts anytime, anywhere, any place, right from your smartphone or tableta. And take advantage of the 20% off. That's 20% off the app and all DDP Yoga related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, including hats, t-shirts, yoga mats, heart monitors, so much more. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And don't forget, inspiration meets perspiration, ddpuktour.com. DDP live in Glasgow, Manchester, Birmingham, London. Go check out those tickets. Get in the best shape of your life, mentally and physically, and do it now.
Frankin' Chicken,
he's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken, bark, bark. Frankin' Chicken,
he's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken,
bark, bark.
Frankin' Chicken,
he's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken, bark, bark. Frankin' Chicken,
he's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken, bark, bark.
After doing this for 3 years, I still screw up sometimes.
I know, right?
And press the wrong buttons, right? And it's funny too. I have the Zoom recorder, and I always plug it into the wall.
Yeah.
But I left the cord at the like address room weeks ago. So now I'm doing it on batteries.
Yeah.
And I just had Phil Collin the other day, and as I was talking, the battery went down to like one bar. And I was like, if this thing goes out while I'm talking to him, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I use new batteries. I've got it all figured out.
I'm the same way, dude. Like I said, I'm constantly like staring at it. Like
you have to.
Starts blinking. I'm like, God damn it.
It will still bite you.
I've had
it
cut me off like twice.
Really?
Because I just start talking.
With who?
No, just by me. Gotcha. Yeah, just me. So thank God for that. But yeah, oh, it was panic-inducing, dude. It was so funny.
Oh, yeah. I was at Paul Stanley's house, actually. second time I had him on, and I was trying to get this thing to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just kept going like the rotating circle.
Yeah.
And Paul's sitting there, and I'm like, just give me three more seconds. Yeah. He's like, okay. And it's like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I'm like, he's just going to get up and leave. Or yeah, he's going to kick me out. But but for the third time,
yes,
Corey Taylor is back on Talk is Jericho. And I still get comments about Frank and Chicken.
Really?
Yeah.
So good. To this day, it's still one of the most awesome yet surreal moments of my life. Just
have you gotten any more of those freak show wrestlings?
Never in town, but you know what? Sin hits me up all the time.
Yeah.
Like, he hits me up. He's like, are you in town? I'm like, no.
Uh-huh.
Like, so yeah, I definitely want to get down there and see another freak show wrestling show. He's so good.
He's such a hustler. Sin,
he's so rad, dude. Yeah. Like, just... his shows are so weird.
We're talking about the freak show wrestling that Corey went to with all these weird characters. I think the last one I saw was the ghost of Michael Jackson versus the ghost of Whitney Houston.
Dude, it's so weird. You're just like, what the? Like, you put that on the card? Yeah. Like, that was.
That's it. And some guy comes right. Out dressed like Michael Jackson. He's fighting Whitney Houston.
I'll show up. I'll see it. It's cool.
But last year, you did something with NXT wrestling.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
In Download. Tell me about that.
We were at Aftershock.
Oh, Aftershock.
Yeah. No, we were at Aftershock. And you know, our mutual friend, Tom,
AKA
Baron Corbin. Hit me up and was like, dude, you want to do something? I was like, yeah, I want to do something. And, dude, I was just trying so hard not to mark out on everybody. And just everyone who worked there was just like, first of all, they were very cool. And they were coming up to me taking pictures and shit. And I was just like, that's it. Got in. I did it. You know, it was this whole angle. Like, we were talking shit on each other leading up to Aftershock. Like, I was closing the show with Slipknot, and yet he was going to close the show at the house show. And I was like, all right, cool. All right. So we're smacking each other. Court Graves was in on it. And then we get to the show, and they set me in the front, right? And he's ripping me, and he's working with Samoa Joe.
Oh, okay.
So... He bails from the ring and rolls out and kind of comes up and he's talking to me and dude, I had to smack the fuck out of him and he's such a tall dude. I'm not a tall guy, so I kind of had to come up on it, right?
You jump up on your toes, yeah.
Exactly. And he goes, look, just don't hit me in the ear, and just if you got to, hit me in the neck. And I was like, dude, I'll get your cheek. I just gotta. And make sure I come, like, I couldn't come down on it.
Right.
So I had to come up on it. And, dude, the video, it's so loud. I didn't realize I hit him that hard. And then Samoa, rolls out. He grabs him for the big win. And then Samoa came out, raised my hand. I was like, this is f***ing awesome. Like, losing my shit. We came backstage, dude, and me and Ben are f***ing like kids, dude. We're like, that was great. So yeah, man, that was my big moment.
Your moment in wrestling.
I was like, oh,
because I remember
everybody's like, you want to do a match? I was like, what are you f***ing nuts? No,
you could do a match though.
No.
No, don't do that.
I could do a match like Jay Leno could do a match with Hogan. You know, like just. That
because I remember years ago when we were having the guest host on Raw, you called me. He's like, can we do something on Raw?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah.
And I told them, but they're so crazy sometimes. It's like, you know, Corey from Slipknot wants to do something, like, well, we'll look into it and see. And it's like, look, like, what's to look into,
right? Exactly.
You'll have John Lovitz host Raw. But you won't have Slipknot?
Well, I mean, in his defense, he does have higher Q points than I do. I mean, it is what it is.
And then this year, something that nobody knows is that you and I spoke about it, that one of the ideas initially was for a band to play me to the ring at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And my first suggestion was Stone Sour.
Yeah, we worked really hard on it.
Did they actually call you and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, we were my manager was working with WWE.
Neil.
I mean, it was all coming down to like budget and all this stuff. And I think at the last minute, they just decided that they weren't going to do any live music. So it was, I mean, but they're definitely keeping us in mind for like future stuff, which I'm like,
I thought that could be cool. Yeah. The last I heard of it was that Vince decided he didn't want to have anybody play down to the ring. Cause they had whoever it was singing the national anthem or whatever. Yeah. And that was about it. But
it would have been rad. Like, I was so stoked. Like, I was telling everybody, it's like, we gotta go. And at one point, we were talking about dressing as our favorite wrestlers as well. I was gonna come out in full Roddy, man. Like, you know, the hot rod shirt, the kilt, just lay it down, you know?
Right, right.
And they were like, well, you know, we don't want you to make fun. I was like, this isn't about making fun, dude. We're fans.
This is homage, yeah.
Yeah, so it was
very
cool.
Who are the other guys in the band going to be?
I think Josh was going to do Stone Cold because he's the only bald guy.
Bald, yeah.
Yeah. That's easy. I think Chow was going to do Luke Harper because he looks just like him. Just like him, dude. We've been talking about doing a weird little like video, but getting all like the wrestler action figures that look like us and like doing it like a stop action kind of thing.
Oh, that's cool.
He looks just like Luke. It's so cool.
I believe, is it Rochester or Buffalo that he's from?
Buffalo, yeah.
Yeah, so he came to the show in Buffalo. I got him tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
And I introduced him to Harper.
Oh, did he really?
It was like Big Me and Mini Me.
Right, exactly.
They look the same guy, right?
You could almost do like a Hulk and Bruce Banner thing.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good one.
Man. Tooch. I think we were going to do Tooch as one of the Nasty Boys because he's got the hair and he was the punk dude. Roy was going to be, I think Roy wanted to be Lou Albano. He was going to get the rubber bands and shit. That would have been genius.
That would have been great. Yeah,
it was so good.
Yeah, well, it was almost happened. So maybe in the future.
Yeah. We were really stoked. And I was pretty bummed that we couldn't do it. But at the same time, just that we were considered all the way up to that, man, it was pretty cool.
What's the fact that you're such a huge fan, too?
Oh, yeah.
You know, something you would really appreciate.
Absolutely.
Do you still watch a lot when you're on tour?
I try to. Yeah, it's been like the last few months have been pretty crazy. I can't believe they put like the belts on right now. It's insane. It's so cool.
And on who?
Orton dropped it to
Jinder.
Yeah, Jinder. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, that's pretty rad, to be honest. Like out of nowhere, and everybody, dude, the shockwave was like people were. I had my buddies at home, Stubbs, call me up. He's like, did you see what they did? I was like, no. And I went on. I was like, holy shit. That's huge, though, man.
Well, it was so amazing just to see, like, I think 2 or 3 weeks before he lost to Finn in, like, a minute.
Then he
gets traded to SmackDown. He wins the number one contender, and then he wins the title.
Yeah.
So it just shows how quickly things can switch.
Exactly, man.
You know?
It's pretty good, man. There's good storylines going on right now. I love that Finn. Now, Finn's kind of, he's healing right now, right?
I'm not sure. He's kind of in the middle.
He's in the middle, yeah.
I think they might put him up against Brock, maybe.
Which would be weird.
Interesting. As the demon.
Yeah.
The demon character.
Which, I mean, could be interesting. I mean, that could be a really good match. It's some good shit going on.
Do you watch NXT as well?
I try to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've let my membership lapse twice, which is so sad. So I'm like, gotta sign back up, and I keep getting the emails.
You mean your WWE Network?
You know, you haven't been on the network in a while. I'm like, son of a bitch.
For like, $9.99.
Damn it, I'm on some of these shows. So stupid.
That's right. Shouldn't you get a free membership now?
Well, at least half price.
Yeah, right? It should be a $4.99.
Good shit.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
It's good for them. Right,
exactly.
Who do you like in NXT that you think can be a big star?
God, man, I don't even know who's in NXT. Oh, they keep moving up.
Yeah, a lot of guys have moved up.
Is it Shinsuke?
Shinsuke just came up.
Yeah, he just came up. So he's going to be really, really good.
He's got great, just natural charisma.
Yeah.
And in the ring, he doesn't do a lot, but it's all meaningful.
Exactly.
He's
just one of those players, man. I think now that he's come up, he's going to start to really kind of come into his own and really kind of start to, like, physically try different things, you know? He reminds me a lot of, like, Jake the Snake.
Interesting.
Like, when he was, you know, because Jake was just all eyes, man. Like, he could just look at you and just be like, well, I'm not fucking with you. He wasn't the biggest dude, but he was the baddest dude, you know? So I could see that with him.
The character and the psychology of what he had.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And that's this real secret of wrestling. And like you said, too, like Shinsuke getting that confidence. It's like being in a band and singing.
Exactly.
When you have that confidence, nobody can touch you.
When you have that confidence, it doesn't matter what's going on behind the scenes. It doesn't matter what's going on anywhere else. It's all about the show.
That's right.
And you will never see anyone have a bad show because it's like, hey, you know what? Shit happens.
Right.
This is special. This is for you. And that's all that matters.
Roll with it. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
It happens. I think 2 days ago, Rocklahoma, maybe, you know, the show starts, I go to sing and there's no ears. You wear inner ears and for whatever reason, festivals, you know
I've
how
had
it is.
That. Yeah.
But guess what? Once the train leaves the station,
you're going to where your destination is.
You take that ear out, you find the sweet spot old school on stage,
exactly.
And you just start rocking, you know?
I just had that the other night.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We've been fighting our packs for, God, like a couple of shows, and we're going to switch them out, but we had to just kind of get through these last couple shows. But, yeah, I've turned it on, and all of a sudden there was no vocals. I was like, ah, shit. So I just pulled them, and I was like, it, you know? Because, yeah. I mean, I spent, 10 years off.
Sure.
On just working off, honestly, not even working off monitors, working off the mains.
Wow.
And just feeling the room,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So when you do that, you know how it is. It trains you to be able to know where to go. You talk about the sweet spot.
Yeah.
It's just about, don't feed back and don't find a spot where all you hear is guitar, you know?
Right. That's right.
Because that's it.
Every stage will have the sweet spot. What we're talking about is there'll be a spot where you can hear your vocal nicely.
Yeah.
You might not be able to move 2 inches to the left or the right for the rest of the gig.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's where you got
to
sing.
That's where you come to when you have to work. And
that's
then everything else is running. You know?
That's exactly right. But that's interesting. Like you said, I'm sure a lot of younger bands would not know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
When you grew up through the system like we did, playing these shitty little clubs, that's just go into old school mode.
And it's such a weird generational gap, too, man. Like you talk to kids like that, and they're like, they're just honestly stunned. They're like, how did you work? And I'm like, well, you just work. What are you going to do? Stop the show, it's like you just get on with it. And that's why, I mean, one of the things that, like, when I talk to younger bands, or I've done speaking gigs at, like, some of the musical schools,
spoken word stuff.
Yeah. And they ask, and the thing I get asked is, like, what would you tell the next generation? I was like, get in front of a fucking audience and do it for real. Don't YouTube it, don't fucking Vine it, which, you know, I mean, not even a thing anymore. But do it, get out in front of a audience and do and learn to do it. You know, it's the same thing with wrestling, man. Get in front of an audience. You can only practice so much before you have to fucking apply it in that situation.
Right.
And if you don't, you're just setting yourself up for a very sterile, very clinical, very honestly flat experience when you go in front of an audience. Whereas if you just get out there and you allow yourself that room to make mistakes, to learn the craft, to cut your teeth, you're gonna learn how to think on your feet and never find yourself in a situation where you don't know what to do.
Right. I was in a band in high school with a guy. He was a great guitar player, but he would never wanted to play shows
because
we're not ready.
Yeah.
Well, how are we ever gonna get ready
if you don't get out?
We won't sound good. Well, that's how you learn to sound good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's still, and he's still to this day a great guitar player, but has never been really in a band.
Quite a few.
Those guys, right?
Yeah, they're excellent, but they're excellent in their room, and maybe that's enough for them. You know, I mean, sometimes, I mean, there's something to be said about the pleasure that you get just from playing a guitar by yourself. And the pleasure that you get from being in front of a live audience, you know, like, and Josh Rand is a perfect example of this. He was that guy. Like, he didn't play his first show until he joined Stone Sour.
Wow.
And he was just that guy that just loved writing music, loved playing guitar, loved jamming with people, but he just didn't know what he was missing. And then we played our first show, and just, you want to talk about throwing some shit at the addict. He is a monster now, dude. He's just like, we got to play, like, so into it, you know.
Right.
And it's one of those things where you just sometimes you just never know what you're missing until you get in front of that, and you're just like, wow, this is palpable, this is good, you know.
Yeah.
Talk is Jericho.
Let me ask you this. So you have a duality, no pun intended, as I do, where, you know, Fozzie took 2016 off, so it was all WWE. It was a great run. Always knew in May of 17 that was Fozzie time.
Yeah.
It took me a couple weeks to get out of wrestling mindset into Fozzie mindset. How is it for you when you jump from from Slipknot to Stone Sour?
That's interesting. It's kind of the same way, man. Like, it's, and especially because, I mean, Slipknot's such a dark place, you know?
Absolutely.
And Stone Sour is so much more
positive, happy.
It's a party, man. Like, it's, like, I always said, Stone Sour's the party and Slipknot's the hangover. You know, it really is in a lot of ways.
That's good.
It takes a second, you know? And that's why I gave myself about 3 months between the end of the Slipknot run and the start of going into the studio with Stone Sour, not only to just kind of spend time with my family, but also to kind of wrap my head around, you know, where I was going, you know, because it's the reason that sometimes there's bleed over is because, I mean, the end of Slipknot would butt right up against the beginning of Stone Sour.
Right.
And I'd go into making an album with that kind of mindset, and I'd just like, well, I'm not feeling it. And it would take me a little time to kind of, I'd have to go back and, like, recut vocals and shit just to kind of bring that life back, you know? So, but with this, I knew exactly what I wanted to do right from the start, you know?
You mean for this record?
Yeah, for this record. So it was good for me to really kind of take time and take a second. Plus, physically, I needed it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it took a second for me to kind of to make that switch. But once I did, man, it was all good.
So you said you knew what you wanted to do. What did you want to do?
Vocally, I mean, musically, it was night and day. You know, we wanted that old school passion from like rock and roll that you would get from like AC/DC, Van Halen, you know, like older Metallica, where it was like heavy, but it was in your face, but it was like, yeah, you know, that energy, you know, and that's what we wanted with this, you know? So I needed time to kind of reset everything and open up again, you know, because I mean, going into Slipknot is such a gnarly headspace for me that it's easy for me to slip into depressions and shit when I'm doing it. And then coming off the road, you have to give yourself time to kind of like depressurize and luckily I've got these weirdos to help me do that. They're such
guys
dorks.
In your band.
We're all such dorks, man. And then that really kind of carried over into the recording experience. So really once we went in, it was so much easier for me to just kind of click that switch and be like, okay, here we go. This is going to be great.
You know, it's funny. I was watching, I follow you on Instagram, and you do such wacky, weird stuff.
Yeah.
I think you had something with a thumb or something.
Oh, the Thumbcats.
Thumbcats.
Yeah.
Talk about the Thumbcats.
So Thumbcats. Honestly, this happened, God, like a year and a half ago. Me and Tooch, is actually right before I had my surgery. Me and Tooch were over in London. I was doing an acoustic gig at Coco, which is a really cool old school club. And Tooch came with me to just kind of do whatever. And we were so jet lagged, out of our mind. But we were trying to get on like the right schedule and shit. You know how it is,
yeah.
Where you're just kind of wandering around, but you feel like you're underwater.
I feel like you're drunk.
He and I are out of our shit, right? Just goofy and making each other laugh and shit. And we were hanging with poor Jenny Douglas, who was our handler at the time. And we were walking to a theater to see, I think it was Captain America Civil War. So this tells you, like, because I was like dying. I was like, we gotta fucking go see it. We gotta go see it. So we're walking through, I think it was Hyde Park. And we have this thing that we do, which is called the 808, and we just kind of just this intense face and the thumbs up, you know,
man.
And that slowly morphed into Thumbcats, which was this brilliant idea. That we were just like, how do we monetize this thumbs up? Well, what if we drew a shitty cat on our thumb? Thumbcats, and just became this dumb, and then we were doing it in the studio, and the fans just took it and made it something really funny, you know? And I, to this day, I've saved all of these weird snapshots of all of these Thumbcats. So now, and this is so true, we have these temporary tattoo things that we're doing with Stone Sour, and one is a shitty drawn Thumbcat that I drew on a napkin and handed to the head of the merch company and said, this is our Thumbcat. Don't fuck it up.
And watch, it'll get over.
It'll blow up.
It'll
and I'm
over.
Like, this is the, and it all came from me and Tooch just being so spun that we didn't know where we were going.
Well, just to take so that, weird. I was watching Thumbcast. I was like, I got to do something like that. And I was at Chipotle, so I created Burrito Boy, where he just eats a burrito. And it's like, I'm Burrito Boy. Look at my burrito. And I put it up. It got like 200,000 views.
Right.
And said, we love Burrito Boy. And I'm like, maybe I'll make a Burrito Boy shirt.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Right?
Burrito Boy versus Thumbcats coming soon.
Oh, that'll be
fun. My Thumbcats.
We'll see. We'll sell it to Sin Bodhi and we'll do a show.
Call back.
Here we go.
So let's talk about Hydrograd, which,
yeah,
by the way, very cool title. I don't know what it means.
It doesn't mean shit.
Okay. I don't know if it's some kind of like a weed thing. Or...
So, no, it was, okay.
It doesn't mean shit.
It doesn't. I was running through okay, you know... You've flown. You know some of the older Eastern European airports.
Yes.
Are, how we say, antiquated. So I'm running, and I can't even remember which airport it was. I was running. I was late. I was trying not to miss my flight. And I'm looking up, and the gate info was on all these like old 80s digital Timex, you know, the
yeah,
block number,
yeah,
letter. Not only was it cycling through different languages, it was cycling through Cyrillic and regular alphabets. So I'm like, oh God, where's my key? And I ran by one, and my brain saw the word Hydrograd. And I went, where the f*** is that? And I started kind of obsessing about it. I stopped, and I went, I got to f*** know. And I walked back, and it wasn't even close. Didn't even start with an H. Like, it was like Milan or something. And I just kind of went, oh, good, good. And I walked away, and I was like, oh, I better catch my flight. Well, that's kind of a cool name. And it stuck with me. And came time to do this album, and I named one of the songs Hydrograd that I'd written. I said, that's kind of a cool name for the album. So it was kind of that. Like, and that's kind of the overall vibe of the album, too. It's like, it doesn't mean shit, but it feels cool.
Feels right.
Know?
Sounds
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
I interviewed Adrian Smith a few years ago, and he had it was called Primal Rock Rebellion. It was like a side project he was doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, what's your favorite song? And he went, Bride's Fire. And I went, Brides of Fire? He said, no, Brides of Fire. Brides of Fire? No, Bright as a Fire. But I thought, Brides of Fire?
Brides of Fire.
On the last
good.
Fozzy record, yeah, there's a song called Brides of Fire. That's where it came from.
Nice.
There you go, Brides of Fire. So, and the funny thing with Hydrograd was a lot of different people were telling me, wait till you hear this record.
Oh, yeah.
Jay Rustin told me that.
Oh, nice.
I think Styx from Steel Panther told me that.
Yeah.
The word was getting around about this record.
Man.
And that's a pretty cool thing to have before it's even come out.
We had people come in while we were making the album, even before some of the songs were finished, and they were just freaking out, man. So we were like, we realized we had something special. I mean, especially people who have no real vested interest in anything, but they were walking away going, holy shit, man. So that got us excited, you know, and it added to the fire that we were playing with, man. Like we were we tracked almost everything live. I mean, with no click, no grid,
wow.
no nothing. We did it old
like
school.
Like all guys in the room at
all
once?
All of us in the room.
That's cool.
You know, if I wasn't playing guitar, I was in the vocal booth, you know, like singing along. And we would just capture this energy, man. Like it was just, it was one of the best experiences we've ever had. Like it was so dope. And there was a part of us that was pretty stoked about the fact is like there's only maybe a handful of bands on the planet that could do what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Right now. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So it, for us, in a way, it was a cool way to kind of prove that it can be done, and it was a cool way for us to kind of prove to ourselves that we had the talent, and we had the chops, and we had the songs, you know? So it was really cool.
That's interesting, because I know that Iron Maiden does their records that way, and I can't think of many other bands that do, you know?
I don't know why, man.
Maybe the Stones, maybe?
Maybe. I mean, that would make sense. They've got that natural groove that you definitely would lend itself to that. I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that maybe people are just so used to doing it a certain way now. Whereas before, you know, when you had 2-inch tape, that's what you did, you know? You'd have some weird Casio, you know, meter going on in the background, or
Casio.
You just kind of did it, right?
Right.
And now it's almost the opposite. People are so used to the grid, and I can't remember I think Josh put it this way: it's like people listen with their eyes now instead of their ears because they're so like locked into looking at Pro Tools and making sure it all lines
up. Great point.
And I was like, "That's brilliant," you know. And I can't take credit for that. That was all Josh Rand, and it really made me start thinking about it. I was like, he's right. And that's one of the reasons why so many bands lose that groove, that loose, I call it ass, that's in the music, you know, just putting that ass in it. And that's why we did, like, that's one of the reasons why we did it out there. And we would, when we would, you know, recut the guitars and shit, we would turn all the monitors off. It's like, don't look at it. You know, Jay would have one that he would look at.
Mm.
And we just played all by feel, man. And it came out so like tight in a weird way where it was like it has that live feel, you know. I cannot wait for people to hear this.
If somebody makes a mistake, do you just punch in that note, for example? If you have
basically I mean, it was, you know, the drums are all live, you know. We took that like the two or three passes maybe, and Roy was so on it, it didn't even matter. And then Chow, for the most part, we would keep his live bass too, because he was so locked in with those passes. Maybe punch a couple of different things. The guitars, we would leave the meat of the rhythm that we played with, but then, you know, add on to that and then play and then add, you know, the little ear candy and shit. I would come in the next day and sing, and song done. I mean, and we did a song a day. We did 19 songs inside a month.
Wow.
It was insane.
The thing is, too, that by playing them like that, it's like that's almost like your rehearsal for a tour, too.
Exactly. Yeah, and we had, and that's how, and honestly, it's the way we did the demos was live at Roy's garage, you know. So in a way, that kind of prepared us too for knowing what it was going to sound like naturally, and then knowing what we wanted to try and do, like when we went in the studio.
Because there's so many songs that you do, and you record it, but you never play it live.
Yeah.
Or like for example, like for Judas for this tour, we had to get, you know, you have to go rehearse because we've never played it live. And right. We did their parts.
Yeah, yeah.
But you got to lock it in. So you guys have kind of killed two birds with one stone.
Yeah, and it's really came off, man. It takes a lot of that early kind of learning jitters out of it, you know. Like Fabulous and Song 3, those are the songs that we're kind of doing live right now. And it's our drum tech.
Yeah.
And it's effortless. Like there wasn't even any real learning curve, man. It's like we're so used to playing this that, you know, just put it in front of an audience, you know.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk a little bit about the how Stone Sour came to be, because obviously you made your name with Slipknot, one of the biggest bands on the planet, and then, gosh, it seems like it might have been 10 years ago now at this point or something where I hear, oh yeah, Corey's got another band called Stone Sour. Well, that's interesting. where did that come from?
Well, Stone Sour was the band I was in before I joined Slipknot.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, okay. I joined in 92, or I started Stone Sour in 92, and then I left in 97 to join Slipknot.
Gotcha.
And then, I mean, so we were doing Slipknot for about 4 or 5 years. I mean, they were a band before I was in. Slipknot was, yeah. And we actually did shows together, Stone Sour and Slipknot, which was really cool. And we all knew each other in the scene, you know, so we were all friends and shit.
On the farm?
Yeah, basically, yes. Yes, playing the farm circuit. But, you know, around 2001-ish, 2000, you know, right around in that area, I was starting to kind of like need to do other stuff, you know, because Slipknot was awesome, but I just musically couldn't keep up with the guitar players. Like I just have a certain way that I write, and it did, at the time, God, didn't really vibe with Slipknot. They were so good at it. I was like, well, I'm not going to try and keep up with that, you know? And those two, their first two albums, I wrote one riff, which, you know, was pretty cool, but it was still one riff. I wrote all the lyrics, but it was it, you know. There was just more I wanted to do. Me and Josh, we've known each other since we were 15. And we have always written music together. And Stone Sour kind of came back because of that project that he and I were doing. We played some demos for, at the time, the head of A&R at Roadrunner. And they were like, he was like, this is really cool. Put a band together and let's see what happens. And that was really it. I mean, if we'd had our way, we wouldn't even use the name Stone Sour, because we had like four other names before we even went to Stone Sour, because nobody wanted it, you know. Like,
what,
no, it's like,
what are the names did you have?
Well, Super Ego was the original.
Okay.
Well, Project X actually was the first hit. That was taken. Super Ego was one that was taken. Closure was one that was taken. I was like, Closure, like I hate that name. Why is taken. That taken?
Right.
And there was another one, and finally I was like, when that one was saying, I can't remember what the other one was. Yeah. It was so fucking stupid. And I finally called everybody. I was like, God damn it. Listen. It's Stone Sour, guys. It's made up of ex-members of Stone Sour. We're playing Stone Sour songs from before I left to join Slipknot. Call it what it is. Plus, nobody gives a shit about this name. But once we did it, everything took off. Like, once we took that name, we were able to put the album out, because the album was done. Album was recorded. I had actually done Bother, and I had to put it under my name on the Spider-Man soundtrack because we didn't have a name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. And so that's why that's credited under me, and then ended up being on the Stone Sour album.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, once we just accepted fate, it was, you know, the rest was history.
Like you said, sometimes you think too much about a name, and a name is just a name.
A name is a name. Yeah. I mean, what do you think Metallica means?
Right.
At the time, it didn't mean shit. Now, it means something, but it's because the music has made
and
it.
That's the thing. It's funny because for our show, it's like constantly people chanting Fozzy.
Right.
And for people thought, well, that's a dumb name, maybe, but it's the easiest.
It's very chantable.
To chant. And if you see any show, all show, I post videos, Fozzy, Fozzy. People just like to hear their own voice.
times. Yeah, dude.
And it's like, all right, well, there you go. That's the name.
There you go. You know?
So that's a smart way to look at
exactly.
it.
Exactly. The name doesn't make you. You make the name.
Good point. Good
Absolutely.
Point. But now with Hydrograd and then the record before with the House of Golden Bones.
Yeah.
House of Golden Bones. Stone Sour is becoming a legit headlining. You're headlining the festival here tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's become almost as big as Slipknot in a lot of ways.
It's pretty crazy, yeah, on its own right, you know. And we've always made sure that we've done everything on our own, you know. We've never played Slipknot songs.
Right.
We have never, like, I remember when we, I think when we put it out, Come Whatever May, they wanted to use the, you know, they put the sticker on the front. And it's like featuring, you know, Jim and Corey Taylor from blah, 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 blah. And I'd made them take it off of the first album. And then they tried to do it again on Come Whenever May. And they wanted to use the Slipknot logo. And it's like, you put that sticker on it, I'm quitting, and you will never get a drop of work out of me ever again. Mm. And they didn't. Like, they took the logo off. They still put a hint of Slipknot on there. But
I hate that shit. Featuring Chris Jericho from WWE. It's like,
it's not. God damn it. Just stop. It's
a band.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's disrespectful to the other guys in the band by trying to trade on that kind of bullshit.
The fans, too. It makes you look like you're trying to, like...
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
It's just... So it takes time. You know how it is, man. It takes time to work on your own...
own merits.
Yes.
Own reputation.
Own merits. Yeah. Absolutely. So it's taken a long time, man. You know, it's 15 years since the first album came out with Stone Sour. Yeah, it's crazy. And it's just gotten bigger and bigger every time. So
I can't think of another guy. There might be somebody that's in two really huge bands. The singer of both.
The only one I can really think of is maybe Maynard.
Perfect Circle and Tool. Yeah,
but he also, you know, he does Pussifer and stuff like that.
Good point.
I mean, that's
the only one.
It.
Maybe, yeah.
But it's crazy, man. It takes time. It takes work, and it takes respect. And it takes respect for both projects, you know, and never letting one bleed into the other. And you know, when you're younger, you don't really give a shit. But then as you get older, you really put a lot of emphasis on it, you know.
How was that for the guys in both respective bands when you have to go from one to the other? Oh, Miles. There's another one. Miles with Slash.
Absolutely.
With Alter Bridge.
Yeah.
But how is that for the guys in Slipknot or the guys in Stone Sour when you're doing the other?
Luckily, both bands are loaded with talented people, you know. So they, you know, they go off. They do their own thing. Like Clown, I'm kicking him in the ass right now to do another movie because he is so good, man. Mm-hmm. Officer Down is so good that it's criminal that he doesn't just have another project right now. And I know he wants to do it, so I'm really pushing him to do that. But everybody else in the band kind of has their own thing, you know. And it's the same with, you know, Stone Sour. Roy goes out and tours with other bands if he gets bored and shit. He doesn't really have to because he does a lot of like soundtrack work and shit.
Okay,
like, he scores like commercials and he does stuff from like movies. Yeah, it's pretty cool, you know. It's like and that alleviates so much pressure that you maybe is on you, because 9 times out of 10 you do all the work and you never want to feel like A, you're taking more credit than you need, and B, that you're getting too much attention because it takes away from other people. And sometimes that can naturally happen if you have two different projects, you know, because people will let that kind of build up and be like, well, you know, he's off doing his other shit.
Right, yeah.
So it's a balancing act. And luckily, I'm with good dudes in both bands, and we just kind of do our thing, you know.
It's been cool in Slipknot now with the new guys, new bass player, new drummer.
Yeah, man.
Everything's working.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. They're you know, I mean, Jay's doing, you know, a lot of clinic shit. He's doing a lot of stuff. V-Man's doing some stuff in England right now.
You know that V-Man was our tech for a couple tours?
It's crazy, right?
And when I first saw the release of, like, the new guy, I saw that tattoo on his hand, and I was like, is that V-Man? I think I might have even asked you, like, don't say anything if you can't, but is that V-Man? You're like, yes, but don't say anything. Like, good for him.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty rad, man. And he's such a good dude, you know?
Like,
both those dudes are so solid and cool. It's really a great new energy that's come out of it, you know?
Now, for a while, Jim was in Stone Sour as well.
Yeah.
Was that a tough transition? You had to, like, why did you have to make the split there?
I mean, it was tough when we made the split. It's just, you know.
Too similar?
Well, no, just Jim just wasn't happy,
gotcha.
You know? And unfortunately, we kind of had to pull the trigger on it, and we could just because you just, you know, sometimes you just know, you know. And it was difficult and,
a little
and
awkward a lot of ways, at first, I'm sure.
Kind of, and it's kind of still is.
Oh, okay.
And it's, you know, and I respect, you know, I try to respect him as much as possible, but, you know, it's, I feel like it's worked out for both of us, you know, because he was always much more happy in Slipknot. And we're actually, you know, it's opened us up a lot for you know, for whatever reason. So,
that's cool.
Yeah.
That's
I mean, and we all, you know, we all love him and wish him nothing but the best. And hopefully he feels the same way for us.
Do you do like, okay, I have a 2 years with Stone Sour, then 2 years with Slipknot, or do you just kind of see how far it goes?
Kind of like that. I mean, it's a little of both, actually. You kind of allot yourself enough time. But then if there's that weird kind of like gray area where maybe you're working on the Slipknot album, but you've got some opportunities to kind of, you know, do some pickup shows. It's a little of both. So you just try to do it with the eye towards the future. You know, I always try to plan 5 years ahead, and it gets a little loaded sometimes, but it's pretty crazy.
I know, dude.
But it works, you know. I've never had anything really get too convoluted. So, you know, I mean, it's, as long as it works, I'll keep doing it.
Well, see, and you are one of the few guys like me that are always going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you said, because some guys will be off. Okay, I'm taking 6 months. Like, Shadows is like, I don't know how you do it, dude. I'm off for like 6 months now. Yeah. I don't want to see or do anything. For me, when I'm off with Fozzy, then I'll go back to WWE.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
WWE back to Fozzy. And in the meantime, we're writing books and we're doing podcasts and radio shows and all this other stuff. And that brings me, we're in a race. You know, my fourth book is coming out, but guess what? So is yours,
mine.
Taylor. You know, and now we're on the same label too.
I know, it's insane.
DeCapo,
like,
yeah.
I mean, at some point we're just gonna get a timeshare somewhere. It's gonna be fun.
I even said to Ben, who's our editor, I said, Corey and I actually want to write books together. We
right?
had one idea.
Yeah, exactly,
or some kind of something that we could do, some kind of a media thing. But
I'm glad you brought that up too, because I had forgotten like what the concept was, and I was talking to him about it. I was like, this could be really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And what was our idea? It was like to make talk about debate. Albums,
yeah,
or
it was,
movies?
Yeah, it was a music debate that we would then kind of like, you and I would, there would be that first burst where we would talk about it. Like, you would write your thing, then I would write your thing, then we would trade it.
Right.
And then we would react to what we had written.
Yes.
So it would be almost like a point counterpoint on two different,
yes.
Like, you know, like it would be great. Like, it'd be really cool.
And we're thinking we'd do a series. We could do a music one, or like, you know, metal,
music,
rock and roll,
yeah,
movies.
Exactly.
Politics,
like, you could do
paranormal,
so
whatever.
Exactly, man.
Yeah,
it'd be really cool. We still we need to sell him on that
when we get a moment's time to
exactly,
do that.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. We're not doing a million other things.
But let's talk about your fourth book that comes out
August 8th.
Mine comes out August 29th. So there you go.
They probably planned it that way.
And what's the new one called?
Yeah, it's called America 51, which kind of, you know, say it sells itself at this point.
Okay, right. So you're kind of going on the Area 51?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, because it started out completely different, man. It started out very much, like way more positive. It was essentially going to be my love letter to America. Because you know how it is. We tour a lot. We see a lot of different places. We meet a lot of different people. And America gets a bad rap sometimes, and this was going to be me going, guess what? There are all of these amazing places, these amazing people, these amazing stories from, like, it was going to be very regionally centric and like talk about different things and just all the shit that I've gotten to see, you know, I've had the pleasure of seeing, you know, and some of the stuff that makes me proud to be an American sometimes. And then all hell broke loose, and I just kind of, and right up until the election, man, right after the election, I went in, I pulled my computer out, and I just highlighted everything and went, delete. And
wow.
I started from scratch.
You deleted all the plans
you had. I deleted all of it.
Wow.
I deleted everything that I had written because
Why?
I was like, because it suddenly wasn't the book that I wanted to write. It wasn't the story that I wanted to tell. I may still tell that someday, but I was so incensed by everything, not just by Trump or the angry Cheeto. I was him. I was pissed off at the right and the left because it was such a shit show and it was so shabby what had happened that I felt compelled to really kind of stand in the middle and basically let everyone have it. Because whether anyone in office or on the outskirts or doing the news circuit wants to admit is that the majority of Americans are in the middle. They are primarily fiscally conservative and yet socially liberal. And I believe that. I believe that. There are fringe people, but the middle, the majority of Americans are like that. And the fact that the extremists are screaming over the tops of our heads right now and doing the talking for us is really fucking pissing me off. So this is me standing in the middle, trying to get everyone to come to the middle and stop screaming from the outside and talk on the inside and realize that we have more in common than we would like to admit. That's the only way we will compromise. That is the only way we will talk. And that is the only way we will make changes. But we have to talk. Now, it's an angry book. It's going to piss. Ben told me it was the most angry I've ever been. It's the angriest book I've ever written. I was like, oh,
I've had some anger. The last one, you were angry, the guy with the cheese.
This one's brutal, yeah.
In the airport.
Oh, no shit, right?
What was the last book called again? It had a great title.
You're Making Me Hate You.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Which is just the preliminary to You're Making Me Hate You Too.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So that's going to be the next one, probably. But, yeah, this one is, and it's going to piss people off. It's going to piss people off on both sides, and I don't care. I really don't, because I'm so over the petulant rhetoric that I'm tired of it, you know, whether it's people screaming fake news or Nazi or just, it's so blatantly reactionary that no one's making any sense. And I can't take it. I don't want my kids to grow up in a country like that, you know? Especially with all the shit that's going on, whether it's the left attacking people who they think are conservatives or conservatives attacking people on the right. It's amazing.
Don't you find that most of the time it's the extremists that are basically talking? Is that was your basically your point?
Exactly.
Was? They're talking for the majority of the country.
Yeah.
Because those people aren't really saying either way.
Yeah. So what, and this is me trying to get them to speak up and stand up and go, you know what? You're right. We can't let these people on both sides speak for
us. Okay. So how do you write a whole book just on that mission statement?
Basically, I kind of set. Yeah, I mean, you know, the chapters are a little different. It talks about there's a chapter kind of giving a brief essay about what the new GOP, where that came from. It's called how Ronald Reagan saved Christmas, and so weird. And it just kind of talks about how the GOP kind of came to be what it is now, and how it's gotten so far from Reagan's message, which was very inclusive, more traditional, and yet very inclusive. Ronald Reagan wouldn't let any of this shit go on. He would have.
In a lot of ways, Ronald Reagan might be the best president of our lifetime.
In a way, not fiscally, definitely not fiscally, but definitely from the standpoint of a show of strength,
yes,
character,
attitude, power.
Exactly.
Yeah,
he knew how to talk too. He knew how to compromise. Chris Matthews wrote a book where, because he was chief of staff for Tip O'Neill.
Okay.
He wrote a book about Reagan's and Tip's relationship and how that couldn't work today because of the extremism, you know, where it was the art of the compromise, you know. George Will always called it.
What was Tip?
Tip O'Neill was the Democratic majority leader.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know his name.
In Congress,
exactly,
yeah. Like
he
was.
Right.
Really,
so Reagan
strong.
Would have to compromise
exactly.
If they get shit done. Yeah.
Exactly. It's very much what's going on, what was going on with Obama, because there was a Republican majority in Congress.
I understand.
And then, but because everyone is so reactionary and extreme, there was no compromise. Everybody just wants to filibuster now. Nobody wants to talk, you know? So there's a little bit about that, a little bit about the Democratic Party, talking about Hillary and stuff like that, and why people turned on her like the way they did, even though she got the majority vote.
Why
to figure that one out?
Why do you think people turned on her?
I think they just didn't like her personality.
Agreed.
You know, I think it was as simple as that. Everyone wants to talk about Benghazi or Bill or all this bullshit. The emails, Christ, shove that shit up your ass. Are you kidding me? There are 50 million emails still missing from the George W. Bush administration. You think 10,000 are going to make a difference?
Right.
Kiss my white ass.
The look on your face right now is the best.
So, I'm just so disgusted. Like people.
But see, what happened with Hillary, though, and I think, and like I'm not a political debater either way.
Yeah.
I just found she's the type of person that I would not want to hang out with.
Yeah, you know, there was a coldness.
Yeah, like there old lady, no warmth, I'd throw crab apples at her house if I was 12. You know,
yeah,
old,
exactly.
Old lady, like, Clinton's coming out here to yell at us,
and it tells you how bad Trump is that she still got the majority vote.
Yes, that's
it
another.
All came down to, I think it was 20,000 votes. That's all he had to get the electorate.
That's insane.
All he got, you know,
that
to win
close.
That.
Right?
That was it. Yeah, totally. And it only came down to those three states. That's all it took for him to swing that.
Wow.
He's not going to get it next time, I tell you that.
Well, I mean, the thing is about this, too, and this is the first time, and I've been saying this for a while, this now changes politics for the rest of time.
Yeah.
Because basically, Trump got in from the celebrity factor.
Yep.
No previous experience.
None.
Nothing.
And it's showing.
You know? I mean, yeah. And Obama didn't really have experience either, but he was a rock star in comparison.
He at least had served in Congress.
He had. He had
a
little.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
He had a little bit.
He had a little bit. But
he
Trump
had way more than Trump did.
But, so now you're talking about, okay, I think Kanye said he'll run for president. The Rock is talking about it now.
Yeah.
You are going to see presidents get in just because of their popularity, their Q rating, and not because of their policies.
Yeah. And see, Trump, here's where Trump f***ed up, and I talk about this in the book. If he had surrounded himself with people who actually knew what they were doing,
yes,
this would be a whole different thing. But
yeah,
he is such a nepotistic narcissist.
He's a billionaire.
Yeah. He doesn't give a f- about anything but the bottom line. He wants to privatize everything because he knows he can probably turn a profit from it.
Does it?
He turned the G summit, I don't remember what the number it is, like G20 or whatever. He turned that summit into how he can't open enough golf courses in Europe. And now the German chancellor today just said, we cannot trust the U.S. as an ally anymore. Just said it to people in the EU.
Wow.
What the fuck is happening? Oh my God. If you're not embarrassed as an American, then you don't know what the hell's going
on. Well, the thing is, it's like, and you have to understand this. It's like the parable of, you know, a guy picks up a snake and the snake bites him. And it's like, why did you bite me? I'm a snake.
I'm a f-ing snake.
Why are you anyone surprised how Trump is? He's a billionaire.
Ask anyone from New York.
He's a self-made billionaire. It'd be like if Vince McMahon was the president, he would do whatever the hell he wants to do. Why not?
But I tell you what, at least Vince would be smart enough to put the right people where they need
agreed
to go.
Yeah, but then I don't know why Trump didn't do that. You
because
know?
He doesn't give a f- about it. Here's the thing. I am so certain that the only reason that Trump ran for president is because the Celebrity Apprentice wasn't number one in the ratings.
Mm.
I am so f- convinced of that because he was reminded of it and beat over the head with it. And he is just that guy that would hold a f-ing grudge, and that's all he wanted to do. That's why he tweets the way he does. That's why he acts the way he does. That's why he puts people who are not qualified to do shit.
I love the Arnold Schwarzenegger Trump tweeting battle.
That was amazing.
It's like I am laughing so hard at both of them.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
You're right.
Both of them are just like, hey, Trump, why don't you look at your ratings? Like, hey, Schwarzenegger, you destroyed the apprentice. It's like, you're the president. You shouldn't be tweeting. You're Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Exactly.
What do you care?
Well, who gives a shit?
I know.
Christ.
Oh, my gosh. It reminds me of that old Eddie Murphy routine. I think it was on Raw that we all used to listen to. Remember that little cassette that we
had?
Where it's like talking about Jesse Jackson running for president.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, man, I voted for Jesse Jackson. He won?
Yeah.
That's exactly. I voted for Trump. He won?
He
what?
Won?
You know, I remember in 1992, Doug Henning ran for the Prime Minister of Canada. Doug Henning was a famous magician.
Okay.
And he had a mustache and a really big overbite, and he had like Malcolm Young hair.
Oh, shit.
And he wore like a Evel Knievel jumpsuit.
Okay. I think he
was a really famous like Tonight Show level magician.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw him on. He said, "If I can make an elephant disappear, I can make the deficit disappear too." Voted for him. Boom. Didn't win, but I was like, "There you go."
That's amazing.
So this would be like if Doug Henning became the Prime Minister of Canada.
Jesus Christ.
So, but I love the fact that you're writing about this, and you have now three really good books. You're a great writer.
Thank you.
I say that from experience of reading your books and also knowing how hard it is to write a book.
Yeah.
Are you basically just taking your computer out on the road in a dressing room like today?
Yeah.
Just busting it out?
I work on the road. I work. I was actually, while we were making Hydrograd, I was writing while we were in the studio, you know, just sitting on the couch, you know, because we co-produced it with Jay. And so I'd be listening to takes and writing, you know. That's one of the reasons why there's no political anything on the album. It's all in the book. I saved all
which
that
is okay, yeah.
Vitriol and crazy shit for the book, yeah.
Let Bono write the political songs.
Exactly.
You just write the fun ones.
I wrote one political song. It was actually the title track for Come Whatever May, and that was it. That's all I needed to say, because people are like, how did you know? I was like, well, we had W at the time. I mean, that's why I wrote that song.
Yeah.
So, and I never thought there would be a fucking president that would make me long for the days of George W. Bush. Holy shit. Right. It takes a lot to make him like his presidency likable, man. Good God.
Just as we wind down, a couple last things. I want to talk to you about the fabulous video.
Yeah.
Which is genius, because we put out this Judas video about the same time yours guys is, and ours was like, I was so excited because it's so artsy, and it was one take, and we filmed it at half speed.
It's badass.
Thanks, dude. And then at the same time, yours comes out. And so I'm like, okay, cool. They starts backstage. I'm like, okay, Corey's just doing the typical on stage band. And then here's the reveal. And I was like, now that's my boy. That's the guy I love right there. And I knew there had to be something coming with the wacky,
the wake inflatable wavy tube men.
Tube
yeah.
men, the Bailey guys.
The Bailey buddies.
The Bailey buddies.
I'd forgotten all about that.
That she has that, yeah.
So here's the thing. We had that idea like 7 years ago. We were going to do it for the digital video. That we ended up doing, and we just couldn't get Roadrunner behind it at the time. Roy had this video. Like, this is his baby for like seven years.
The audience is all man. People,
He was like, wouldn't it be great? Like, originally we wanted to shoot it out at like Burning Man or something and just make this it was going to be amazing. And we just, you know, we held on to it, and we couldn't really do it in the House of Golden Bones because it told the story. But as soon as we were working on, we started talking about videos for this one, we were like, dude, Roy, this is finally, we can do the Tube Men video. He was like, yes! And we called our buddy Paul Brown, who, you know, we had talked to 7 years before. He was going to do it then. And he was like, I still remember exactly what I want to do, how to get it done, and all this shit. And dude, it was just a f***ing blast, dude. If you could have seen the fans just laughing their tits off while we were making this video, we're out there like losing our minds, and then to see it all put together, it was so gratifying.
How many of them was there?
There was only like 12.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man. There was only 12. I mean, that just tells you how good
the way it's shot. It looks like there's hundreds of them,
right? Exactly. And I mean, it's the same with the fans, man. There were only 50 fans there, and he was able to really put it together. You can't tell. Like, it looks so good.
Yeah.
And the way he shot it and the way he put it together, dude, everybody on the crew, we were just having such a blast that day. It was just, it's probably that and Song 3 are like my two favorite videos that we've done. Like,
yeah,
really
Song
good.
Song 3 is great too, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Why did you call it Song 3?
Song number 3, it's called Song number 3 for a lot of reasons, actually. And it's at, and they're, one of the reasons why it's called Song number 3 is because I demoed it. It's made up of two different songs, one of which, like the verse and kind of pre-chorus, is from one song that I wrote years ago, and then the chorus is from like something that I wrote about 8 years ago, and I could never finish them. And then I just said, "Well, fuck it," and I just stuck the two together, and it's like, yeah, song number one, song number two. Here's song number three.
Yeah.
So that, and that's, you're the only one I've ever told that. So that's going out. This is an exclusive on the podcast.
Nice.
Yeah. So, but there's a couple other reasons, you know, that's it's called that, like third time's a charm kind of vibe, where, you know, just kind of working, trying to, you know, write that perfect song about that, like kind of that passion that comes from like real love, you know, because everybody writes about love like it's a movie these days. And it's like, man, fuck all that shit. This is about the real shit, you know? So that's kind of that vibe as well, you know?
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. I like song titles like that because there's always a story behind
exactly.
it.
Exactly, yeah.
You know? Let's just talk, as we almost finished here, about Chris Cornell. Had a great, great little clip of tribute, kind of broke down at the end. Were you friends with Chris? Did you know him?
I had met him. I mean, we weren't friends, but okay. we were acquaintances.
See him
you
around
know?
At yeah, festivals yeah, and man. Stuff. Yeah.
He's such a nice guy, like just a shy guy, just soft spoken, you know, an amazing singer. I feel horrible about this. It wasn't until he passed that I really realized what a big impact he had had on me as a songwriter. I mean, because
as a songwriter,
yeah. I mean, he wrote whatever the fuck he wanted, man. And that, I mean, whether it was, you know, the shit from like the heavy shit from Soundgarden, like from Bad Motorfinger, like Slaves and Bulldozers, or the really amazingly beautiful shit from like the single soundtrack, like Seasons, mm-hmm. which is such a gorgeous song.
Was it the dancey stuff he had on his solo record man. That he got shit for?
You know? And you know what? Fuck you. He did it. He did it because he wanted to, you know? I didn't realize what an influence that was on me until I really put it in perspective. And I was like, holy shit. Like, he was kind of like, he was the dude I looked up to because he didn't give a fuck, man. He wrote what he wanted to fucking write. And I was like, I never got to tell him that. And that is going to be a regret for me, like, for a long fucking time. And it's a goddamn shame.
When grunge, whatever that even means nowadays, but when it became popular, I was such a metal guy.
Yeah.
Maiden, Priest, you know, Metallica, Scorpions, Ozzy. I was so reticent and so hesitating to get into grunge. Didn't want to have anything to do with it except for Soundgarden.
Yeah.
Because his voice was so powerful. He still looked like a rocker. He looked metal. And so I always had that little kinship with Soundgarden. And then the fact that he was also Andrew Wood's roommate.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge Mother Love Bone fan as well.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at, we talked about this, Andrew Wood, Chris Cornell, Cobain, STP, Weiland. You know, and Lane. You know, Lane Staley. All those guys gone.
Even in a way, Shannon Hoon.
Right.
You know, like...
Like, what a dark world they must have lived in for all those guys to suffer basically the same fate. Man, you know what I mean?
I just... It makes you... It makes your heart hurt because you just wish, because you're such a fan, you just wish there could have been something that you could have done, you know? And I mean, with Chris, man, you know, it's a goddamn shame because you could tell that he was fighting those demons and he fought them as hard as he could. And God, I just wish I could have done something, like somebody could have done something.
You just never know, though.
I mean, you just never know. You really do.
Robin Williams, you know?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's why it's one of the reasons why I do so much work with, like, you know, like charities like You Rock Foundation. I do as much as I can to raise awareness and to make people feel like they're not alone, because that's really where it comes down to, is that last bit of hope that there's someone who can empathize and someone who can feel the way that you feel. And I put it out there constantly. It's like, don't give up. Please don't give up. You know, it's important to know that you're not alone. Like, these feelings are overwhelming, but they're not unique. We all feel them, and we're all trying to be there for each other. Because I battled depression
That earlier. Yeah.
I've dealt with it my whole life because I know me. I don't take medication for it because I have addictive, you know, tendencies. And so it's hard for me. I battle it with vitamins. I battle it with exercise. But I still succumb to it every once in a while. And, you know, I go through bouts of that debilitating physical depression, you know, and it's hard, you know, even with therapy, even with this and that. But I keep going because I know that there are people who can empathize, people who can, they can relate, they know. So I have a network of friends, peers, I'm lucky. Some people don't have that. So I try to put that message out there, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about you. We're going to bleed over now. We're doing Talk is Jericho. Then we're going to go do,
a series show. Of bleeps. Yeah,
a series
man.
Of bleeps. Let's talk a little bit about that before we finish up. And yeah, tell me about this, because it's really cool to me that you have, once again, your
man,
own radio show too.
It's there almost like I'm chasing you.
I know.
You
Jericho know? And like, Taylor. Which I saw this kid.
Jericho, you're my high watermark. God damn it. No, I got, you know, a good friend of mine, Zane Lowe. He worked for, BBC Radio 1. Did a lot of work over in the UK. He got hired by Apple Music to put together this radio station, Beats One. You know, and he said one of the people who I really wanted to get a radio show for was you. And he's like, I just love the way you talk. I love the way your mind works. He's like, I want you to play music, but I want you to talk. And I'm like, oh, really? All right. So we had we came up with the show, the concept, and the title comes from the fact that it's censored. And I said, you realize it's just going to be a series of bleeps. And we wrote it on the wall, like, that's the name. And so it's a series
of
bleeps.
I've been thinking that during this show,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. And I'm like, sorry. I tend to just kind of go. But yeah, so it's, they give me, I got an hour every Sunday, 4 p.m. Pacific time. They moved me. I'm on a rock block now with Lars.
Lars has one too,
yeah. He's got a show. And so I don't know if he's my leader or I'm his, but yeah, we're like the Sunday rock block.
So it's online or is it an app or?
It's on, if you have iTunes on your phone.
Okay.
You can look up Apple Radio and then you go to Beats One.
I see.
And then. And the cool thing is that it will air live, but then you can listen to it again, and you can get rid of me and just look at the playlist that I play, which
That's
is really,
cool.
really cool, you know?
Yeah.
So I try to play a lot of stuff that influences me or just music that I'm into, and I try to play a lot of newer stuff, you know, and really kind of, you know, share with the audience, like, what I'm listening to lately, and it's pretty cool, and I just kind of build a show around.
You have a theme every.
Yeah, every show has a theme. Like ours is going to be underappreciated influences, mm-hmm. which is cool. You know, like so really kind of get to the meat of our influences. You know, I just thought of a new one that I'm going to play on the show. Which
there you
is,
go.
Fastway.
Like,
not
nice.
A lot of people give a lot of credit to Fastway, man. So we're
say what you will.
Yeah, exactly. Man, that'll be the song.
Do you know
play,
that
too.
The singer of Fastway is now the singer of Flogging Molly?
Yeah, and has been.
I just found that out.
It's
like
insane.
6 months ago. I was like, wow, good for him.
Right?
Yeah.
It's so night and day. You're just
It's like Irish folk rock to
so good. Yeah. And that's my people. So it's like they Flogging Molly and Dropkick Murphys, man. Like
totally.
when I used to drink, I would put those on and we would just skank around my house. It was so stupid. I was like,
and so we drink good. And we fight and we fight and we drink and we drink and we fight and we fight.
Exactly. God, I
well,
love
cool,
that song.
Man. What's your favorite song on Hydrograd?
Oh, man. Right now, today?
Yeah, right. This minute.
Rose Red, Violent Blue, This Song Is Dumb and So Am I. It was a very long song. I'll play it for you, but it's my favorite. Yeah, it's one of the coolest songs I've ever written, and it's one of the coolest songs that this band has ever really taken and really done.
Yeah.
It's a it's going to be a single, but it's so not a single. Like, it's really cool, but I'll play it for you.
Great,
it's pretty dope.
Well, dude, always a pleasure to have you on.
No worries, man. Thanks for having me.
Frank and Chicken, he's a bad mother clucker. Let's do your show.
Yes.
Thanks again to Corey Taylor. What a great dude. Always great hanging with him. Always great talking to him. I did his show as well, a series of bleeps, which is on Apple Music. It's a great radio show. Go check that out, as we talked about. And also go pre-order both of our books. His is called America 51, Dealing with the State of America Today. Of course, mine is called No is a Four-Letter Word. Get your pre-orders in at my Amazon, at Amazon. No is a Four-Letter Word on Amazon.com. And while you're ordering the books, you should probably go ahead and order the new Stone Sour record, Hydrograd. We found out how they came up with that awesome title. And speaking of awesome, how about you lend an ear to the Team Tiger kind of awesome. It's time for some more hilarious antics from the TTA crew.
We've got another buddy with visible head trauma. Corner of Wabash and Fraterno.
Must be Monday.
Two hard-edged detectives will chase a stack of bodies.
Hendricks, what can you tell me about the murder victim? Is it...
Is that a margarita?
With the help of their freewheeling crime scene investigator to find a trail of corruption.
I call it Juice Plus.
The plus means booze.
Can you take off your sunglasses? This is a lab.
The murder victim. What can you tell us?
I mean, I wouldn't kick her out of bed.
Jesus.
I mean, that's how she died, being kicked. Who wants shots?
Please don't breathe your party fumes in my face.
This fall, stay tuned to CBS and keep your eyes on the Baltimore PD. To find out more, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday on the Jericho Network and Podcast One.
That's it. Team Tiger Awesome's got you covered on laughs and news. Everything you need to know in this lifetime every Sunday on the Jericho Network and Podcast One. Go subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review to all of the fine shows on the Jericho Network. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. New episodes every Monday. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. New episodes every Tuesday. The Raven Effect. New episodes every Monday. Flagship show Keeping It 100 with Conan on Thursdays. Beyond the Darkness, talking all things paranormal. 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And if you haven't subscribed to the latest podcast from Beyond the Darkness, get to patreon.com. Sign up for True Crime Tuesdays. It's ad-free, no commercials, just $5 a month. New episodes every Tuesday. That's at patreon.com. Okay, and there's still some tickets left for my upcoming Words of Jericho show in my hometown of Winnipeg with special guests Lance Storm and Cyrus. That's August 25th at the Club Regent Event Center. Tickets available at Ticketmaster. Also, head over to FozzyRock.com for all the tickets on the Judas Rising Tour, the European leg that starts October 27th in Birmingham, England. Goes through England, Scotland, Ireland, and we're going to head over to Austria, Italy, Germany, Belgium, Switzerland. Go check that out at FozzyRock.com and get your VIP tickets as well, where we're going to play a mini concert for you. Have a lot of fun, rock and roll with you. Thanks again to you. Thanks again to all of our sponsors. Don't forget to click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page on PodcastOne.com and go to Talk Is Jericho to find all the great sponsors, including DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Get 20% off the DDP Yoga app and all DDPY-related merch. Little Caesars, get the extra most bestest pizza all day, every day at participating locations. And Alone, watch new episodes on Thursdays at 10 a Eastern, 9 Central on History. Keep listening now for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And on Friday, we got the story of Stampede Wrestling with Ross Hart on the eve of the passing of Smith Hart. Go back and talk all things Stampede Wrestling, the entire history of one of the greatest local wrestling companies of all time. So we will see you then. Hope you had a great 4th of July. Stay cool, stay hard, stay hungry. In the meantime and in between time, yeah, boy! See you soon.
Listen to new episodes of Talk Is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.